Ken Rudin, thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
Thanks, Elise.
What are you noticing about Colorado politics right now? What stands out most?
Well, I think what stands out most is that in the battle for the Senate in 2014, all the focus all along has been on the states that Obama lost in 2012, states like South Dakota and Montana and North Carolina and Louisiana and, you know, states like that, where Democrats are running scared. And the Republicans hope to win at least a net gain of six seats, so they can take control of the Senate. But Colorado is not one of those states. Colorado is a, I'm not going to call it a blue state, it's certainly a purple state, but it is a state President Obama won in 2012 as well as 2008. And yet that's one of those Obama states that could determine who controls the Senate. And Colorado and Mark Udall never thought they'd be in that position.
What happened with Mark Udall that he could become this vulnerable?
Well, I'm not sure if it's anything that he did wrong. Part of it is Obama's numbers, just as George W. Bush was an albatross for Republicans in 2006 and, of course, 2008. Obama is bringing down a lot of Democratic candidates, or has the potential of bringing down a lot of Democratic candidates in red states, like the ones I mentioned earlier, and kind of marginal states like Colorado. Plus, the fact is that Republicans have a knack of eating their own. And so in the primaries, the Tea Party will battle the establishment. And sometimes the fight will be so ugly, the nominee is so badly wounded, they lose in November. We saw that with Ken Buck in 2010, a seat that the Republicans thought they should win. And a big Republican year like 2010, and Buck lost because of mistakes he made and because the party was split. Cory Gardner managed to bypass that. Whether he elbowed others out the way, but the point is a lot of people left the race. The Tea Party folks and the establishment folks are behind him, and that's good news for the Republicans if they hope to pick up that seat.
What significance does the governor's race have?
Well, nothing nationally, except for the fact that there is a interesting approach that Governor Hickenlooper has taken. He's, from the beginning, he's been a centrist, he's been a consensus builder, he's not one of those ideologues on the right or left. There are many Democrats who are trying to learn that lesson nationwide, and given the fact, and this is all one sentence, by the way, and given the fact that the public is so fed up with Congress and the inability to get anything done in Washington, Hickenlooper is the kind of governor, for better or for worse, is the kind of guy who can push things through the legislature, work with the legislature of both parties, and whether he succeeds all the time or not is not important. The fact is that things do get done at the state level.
And yet, at the same time, he may be more vulnerable in this race because a lot of Democrats are really disillusioned with feeling that he hasn't done enough to protect environmental and health interests with regards to fracking.
Well, I mean, look, fracking is a huge issue nationwide, and perhaps nowhere more so than Colorado, which has a tremendous energy development wing of politics and a strong environmental wing of politics, and they ultimately have to clash. And when you're a governor, you're put in the middle of that. So plus the fact, as a Democrat, you're especially vulnerable because on the Republican side, there is not really an environmental wing that's pushing the party to the left. But there certainly is on the Democratic side, and there certainly is in Colorado. So whenever, you know, you might say that Governor Hickenlooper and Senator Udall may oppose these anti-fracking measures because that's not the way to go, there's a strong environmental wing out there that says, wait a second, this is what we believe in. This is why we elected you in 2010. And if you want us to be energized and come out and vote in 2014, you got to be on our side. And that's the kind of dilemma Democrats like Hickenlooper find themselves in.
And which, in a way, brings us to Congressman Jared Polis.
Well, I mean, there are some people, both on the right and the left, and the Democratic and the Republican Party, who, I don't know if you want to say ideology is more important than party loyalty, but there are some people who feel that, look, this is what I was elected to do, this is what I believe in, and I'm just not going to kowtow to the party elite or the party bosses, whatever that means, to change my views. So for the longest time, one, Polis was pushing these anti-fracking measures to get on the ballot. He was bankrolling them. Two, he knew that Democrats were not happy with it because you didn't want to put the Democratic Party to have in a position, people like Udall and Hickenlooper, in a position to have to decide what to do. And of course, you back these anti-fracking measures, you alienate the energy lobby, the energy industry, then you know they're going to come out with millions of dollars of ads in the fall campaign, and it would also unite, energize Republican voters. So that's the kind of thing that Polis kind of did by pushing these measures on the ballot. And then, lo and behold, Hickenlooper works out this deal where it's off the ballot, it saves the Democrats from this battle of having to decide, and Polis goes along with it. I think Polis did it for obvious reasons, but the fact that he so welcomed this, seemed to so welcome this compromise, that you wonder how you could switch sides so quickly or switch faces so quickly. There were some on the Republican side nationwide, for example, like Ted Cruz of Texas, the senator from Texas, who was also more interested in ideological purity and less about caring about what it does to the party. But the party will keep saying, you know, you gotta respond. You gotta somehow put the party's future in your sights. And Cruz says, you know, no way. I mean, matter of fact, Cruz spends more of his time attacking establishment Republicans than he does Obama and the Democrats. And there are other differences between Jared Polis and Ted Cruz, but that's one of them.
What do you find most surprising? Let's let the whole country be on the board here. What do you find most surprising going into fall elections?
Well, I love midterm elections because they're such a different animal, such a different dynamic than it is during the presidential race. We always talk about how the Democrats don't show up in midterm elections. Well, that's not true. In 2006, they showed up, but the Republicans didn't. In 2010, the Republicans showed up and the Democrats didn't. Usually, whatever way the national winds are blowing, that's who's helped by these midterm elections. But I don't know what to make of 2014, because as much as unpopular as President Obama is throughout most of the country, even in states that he won in 2012, Congress is far lower, sometimes in approval ratings in single digits. So when you go to vote in November, look, and clearly in 2006, there was anti-Bush, anti-Republican feeling around the country on Iraq, on Katrina, on the culture of corruption, on food prices, gas prices. It was an anti-Republican wave. And that put Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in power. And 2 years later, put Obama in the White House. In 2010, it was the opposite. It was an anti-Obama wave, anti-healthcare overhaul, because it was just so enormous, and against socialism and against all these things that the Tea Party railed about in 2009 and 2010. And so the tide, which was so dramatically Democratic with a capital D in 2006 and 2008, became so overwhelmingly Republican in 2010. 2014 is just a different animal because nobody likes anybody. We hate Obama. We hate Congress. We hate the Republicans. We hate the Democrats. Not that anybody is proposing a third party. Of course, people propose it all the time, but it never goes anywhere. There is an anger out there, and the point is, who turns out? Both in 2006, with the culture of corruption, and 2010, the anti-Obama thing, we didn't really see the real intensity of voters' anger, one way or the other, until late September, early October. So we're talking about mid-August here, and you know, there are a lot of Democrats running scared, running away from President Obama. They're nervous about how to stand up or salute him or go along with him. I was in Alaska last month and there was one commercial by this candidate and said, "I will stand up to President Obama every step of the way." And that was the Democratic incumbent. So you know that the Democrats need to figure out how to sell themselves in 2014. So we really don't know what kind of a mood the country is in. Clearly, it's unhappy. Clearly, nothing is getting done. The question is, who gets blamed?
You mentioned third parties. Tell me a little bit more.
Well, the thing is, you know, every time we say that, oh, you know, I mean, we hate the Democrats, what they're doing. We hate the Democrats are so far to the left. The Republicans are so far to the right that we need some kind of a centrist middle. But every time you approach somebody like a Michael Bloomberg or a Colin Powell or something like that, who could run theoretically as a centrist candidate, they back out knowing that, one, you have to raise a gazillion dollars. And even though, you know, you can raise a lot of money and still not get anywhere. The perfect example is Ross Perot in 1992. Tremendous dissatisfaction with President Bush, the first Bush. Dissatisfaction with the personal conduct of Bill Clinton. And then the economy was in real. So you think Ross Perot would be the perfect antidote. But one, the problem with Ross Perot is, one, he wasn't born on Earth. I found that out from many voters. And two, but to be serious, though, I mean, he spent $19 million of his own money. He spent Ross Perot spent $60 million, got 19 million votes, which is more than any third party candidate for president in history has ever gotten. And yet he got zero electoral college votes. The name of the game is not how many votes you get, as President Al Gore will tell you. It's winning the electoral college. And if you're not going to carry a state, then ultimately the only thing a third party candidate does is becomes a protest. And if all it is a protest, then what's the point? Why sink my reputation and my money into this kind of bid, in this kind of effort? And yet, every year you see it in 2014, you'll certainly see it in 2016. Woe is me. I hate what's going on. I wish there was a third party, another party that could come and save this country. But we've been doing that for years. But yet you have George Wallace, who appealed to a certain segment in 1968. You had John Anderson in 1980, and of course, Ross Perot. But ultimately, they don't make a difference. You could make the case that maybe they can hurt candidates like Ralph Nader may have done with Al Gore in Florida in 2000. But for the most part, there's no chance in the world of victory. And it's just frustrating for people to say, if I don't have faith in either of the two major parties, where do I turn other than sitting home?
Ken Rudin, thanks for taking the time to talk.
Well, yeah, I'm still talking. I have much more to talk about. Okay. Thanks, Elise.